This is Ashley B, certified hypnotherapist, and you're listening to Mastermind.
You are now part of a social experiment.
See now where my limit is. Only got no oh-ohs. It's like they just wanna see you struggle. I swear they don't wanna see you shine.
They don't.
It's like they just want you to bleed and they want you to fall. They don't want you to be where the streets are paved with gold.
Welcome to Mastermind, the home of Black excellence and self-mastery. Yes, your host, Mr. G.
Welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us today on the journey towards self-mastery. Our next guest is a licensed hypnotherapist. She focuses on providing hypnotherapy for the Black community and specifically Black men. Her sessions help people deal with their anger, their depression, their anxiety, their phobias, their stress, and their bad habits, helping them to promote growth in their professional life and their private life. Let's welcome today, Ashley B, to the program. Ashley, how are you doing today?
So good. So grateful to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. I know you're just coming off of a busy day, so thank you for, you know, joining us today and being a part of the program.
Absolutely. Yeah. Let's get to it. I'm ready.
Yeah. I do want to say, too, like one of the things that we wanted to do on the program is get a taste of what hypnotherapy actually is and, you know, so we can get a better understanding for our interview. So we did do a session, and in the beginning, I was like, yeah, I don't really need therapy or hypnotherapy, but I'll try it anyway. And I think that definitely, and we discussed this, but that definitely was the wrong approach. But even with it being the wrong approach, you still dealt with it really good. And, when I finished it, the session that we did, it made me realize that I did need it, and that it really helped me get some mental clarity. And I was like thinking for like 4 or 5 hours. Like, so I was like, wow, this is, I sat on my couch like for 4 hours just thinking about just different things and just felt really clear minded. So I thank you for that. And I do apologize for saying like, I don't think I need it, but we're going to try it anyway. Like,
So yeah.
I appreciate it.
Thank you. No, thank you for trusting me enough to go through with it. And it was really great working with you. And it is a really common belief that we don't need these things. So like we're taught that we can just figure it out on our own, that it'll be okay. Like other people have it worse than me. And we kind of associate like various types of therapies with a weakness, you know, when it's really just a tool to help you strengthen yourself. And so it's really, you know, you took that leap of faith. We got through it together, the whole whether you need it or not thing. And we both learned from it. And you, I'm really glad to hear that you sat and thought about things and got clarity, because that's my main concern or goal, is to help clients get clarity on what they need to do on their self-improvement journey and have the tools to actually do it with confidence.
Yeah, I think that's the most important part, because we have so many mental blocks, I feel like, in our lives that prevent us from being our best selves. And therapy definitely allows, you know, things to clear out a little bit. But hypnotherapy is a little bit different than just regular therapy. So I kind of wanted to start by asking you about exactly what hypnotherapy is, because I know sometimes we get the conception that it's like, you know, what was happening in Get Out or that whole thing we see in movies, like you're getting sleepy kind of thing, and you know, making people do stupid things and walk around and bark like dogs, whatever it is that we've seen. So can you clear up, just for somebody that's been studying this field, what hypnotherapy is and how you use it in your practice?
Yeah, thank you. So that's absolutely right. Everyone automatically, especially melanated peoples, they'll be like, no, it's like Get Out. You can't do that to me and all this stuff. So hypnotherapy is a holistic modality that uses not only hypnosis therapeutically, but also a variety of other therapeutic tools that help you to tap into a more powerful part of your mind, in this case, your subconscious mind, for personal transformation and self-improvement and overcome mental and emotional roadblocks that are either keeping you stuck in self-sabotage, bad habits, self-doubt, even sleeplessness. So hypnotherapy, it doesn't do just one thing. So a lot of hypnotherapists struggle to define it in those terms, but it definitely is a holistic modality, meaning that it looks at the person as a whole, not just like the symptoms. We focus on the root cause and how you can move past the root cause of your mental blocks, habits, etc., in a more effortless way without added stress or reliving trauma. And transformation happens relatively quickly as well as a result of that.
That makes sense. That makes sense. What do you think like separates hypnotherapy from like regular therapy? Because I know we'll talk about your background in a little bit, but you have tried both. So like what separates the two, and how do I know which one that I need, whether I need hypnotherapy or just regular therapy?
Yeah, that's a good question. So traditional therapy is often, you know, cognitive behavior therapy. You're talking about things cognitively. You're talking mostly in order to reveal different root causes, motivations, unconscious behavior, thoughts, beliefs. So you're talking it out consciously until you get a breakthrough and you get a therapist who's giving you an objective outside point of view, some insight to your problems, your etc. It can be very beneficial to talk and have an outside perspective. But the difference between that and hypnotherapy is that hypnotherapists, we do listen, you do get an opportunity to vent, but then you do something different. You get to a calm state of being. The hypnotherapist helps you get into a calm state of being to go within to access your own inner wisdom, your own intuition, and kind of get clarity and insight into what's going on within you, those little knots that we find ourselves in, those obstacles, those emotional, mental roadblocks. And you're able to more clearly listen to your inner child, to your shadow self, to your higher self, your wiser self, to get guidance on what you need to release those knots, untie those knots, overcome those blocks, and release anxiety and move forward. So I'm not telling you at any given time what to do. I'm just helping you hear your inner wisdom and heal on the inside so that your outer life can change. And that sounds kind of heavy, but I do believe we operate from the belief that the answers are within you. You just have too many distractions and outside things to be able to hear those answers. So we help you just kind of like get to a calm state of being so you can hear them more clearly. And it's more like a modality for self-healing in that case.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I feel like hypnotherapy is more powerful too in regards to behavioral and thinking changes. Like therapy, I look at it as something more long-term, and then hypnotherapy as something that you can fix issues at a faster rate. I don't know if that's accurate, but that is just the way I view it, you know,
because you've experienced it, right? Yeah, it's yeah. Nice. It's so, yeah. I love that you are the first podcast I've been on that's actually worked with me first to get in, or even been to a hypnotherapist, period, to have a frame of perspective on what it actually is. So I really respect and commend you for being able to try that, over break through the stigma, saying like, I'm going to do this, and you have this positive experience, and now you're able to share and. So, yeah, we do. I always tell people I have the worst business model on the planet because my clients come to me and within a very short period of time are making those shifts. And then they're like, okay, bye. And then I'm like, I spend, great, I'm so happy for you. So, like, most of my time is spending, like, you know, not finding, but just being available for new clients because it's not like you're coming to me every week or every month or whenever. You can always come back, but yeah, changes are made really quickly. So one important, I would never knock traditional therapy, but I just do want to tell people that the most important difference is that hypnotherapists we're not like licensed psychologists, so there's certain things that we can't work with a client on without a doctor referral, like a disorder, schizophrenia, you know, these sorts of diagnoses, and we don't diagnose. It's more like you already know what you're battling, what your diagnosis is, and then you can ask your doctor to sign a note to work with us. So there are symptoms within like every disorder that we can help with, but we can't work with you without that. So that's a different thing too. We can't diagnose, we can't work with disorders without a referral, and we don't prescribe drugs. Like that's not where we are.
Got it. I do commend that part of hypnotherapy too, that it's not like you're not going to 100 sessions before you see a breakthrough. Like, it's pretty quick. And I feel like that doesn't match like the modern medical model, whether it's mental health or physical health or whatever. It's usually like a long-term type of thing. And sometimes they say like medicine and mental health is meant to be like just ongoing, where it's like people are maximizing off of people's mental illnesses,
yeah,
and things of that sort. And there's never, you know, like they say there's not a cure for depression or mental illness, and it just goes on and on. I don't believe that, but that is really conducive to like paying more and more and more into these health fields.
I agree. I've kind of instinctually felt that for the longest time. I've had a beef with that mentality. Like, are you just telling me that? So yeah, I keep paying you money. And you know, there's more and more evidence and whistleblowers that are coming out from the field saying that that is the case, that they have pressure from insurance companies to prolong treatment because a cured client is no longer a paying client. So it's like they actually have to, sometimes they can't even ask insurance companies to cover certain sessions until the client is worse. And it's like, oh, once they reach a certain like critical point, then we can intervene. And so it's like, it really is devastating. I even have a friend right now who is studying to be a psychologist who's thinking about leaving the field because they feel like they're leaving their program because they feel like they're being indoctrinated, like even in the classes, in the college level, university level, to see clients as like cash cows, to see them as just prolong the treatment so that it's more economical for you is what they're being taught.
That's one of the things that kind of like, I think, prevents a lot of people from seeking therapy and certain, you know, methods of healing because of the financial components of it. And it seems like, is this like a hustle? Like, you know what I mean? Or is it the real thing? So definitely appreciate that. Another part of hypnotherapy that I think a lot of us don't understand, and I'm still learning about as well, is tapping into the subconscious mind. So I think once you understand the subconscious mind, like, it kind of makes sense what's being done with hypnotherapy, and it's not this, you know, crazy type of, you know, get out type of mind state type of thing, but it makes sense. So can you explain to us what the subconscious mind is, and what it's responsible for, and how it helps with like changes and things like that when you tap into it?
Absolutely. So I'll start by saying your subconscious is powerful. It is vast. It's mysterious. And I say it's mysterious because there's actually a debate between spiritual, scientific, philosophical arenas that actually debate on what the subconscious actually is. But pretty simply, it started out as a theory by one of the fathers of modern-day psychology, Sigmund Freud. He believed that the mind was divided between a conscious mind, which is our conscious waking state that we're talking here like now, our subconscious, which like holds our underlying beliefs, motivations, our memories, our past experiences, our instincts, and then our unconscious mind, things that we do unconsciously without realizing it. And believe it or not, Freud and the other father of psychology, Carl Jung, they developed their theories on psychology because they were practicing hypnotists. They actually were using hypnosis and working with unconscious and subconscious and kind of figuring out what that was. when they founded psychology. So there would be no modern day psychology if it weren't for hypnosis. And a lot of people don't realize that. So we're like the OG mental health like modality. But the subconscious, it is it's mysterious because it's not associated with any one part of your brain. Like scientists can't measure your brain activity and pinpoint that, okay, this is the region of the brain where your subconscious is acting from. It's really weird because they can't do that yet. They don't have the science to do that yet. They just know that you do enter a you have a subconscious because you dream, because you breathe without thinking about it. There's a part of your mind that is doing things automatically, like breathing, like blinking, like walking, like handwriting, like texting, these things that you don't have to say, okay, I'm going to walk now. You don't have to make those conscious decisions. Your subconscious is doing it automatically. So it's a powerful part of your mind that makes about 95% of your mind power. And it is dictating your beliefs. It's what the root causes of your trauma, your triggers, your anxieties, your fears, your ambitions, your confidence level, the associations that you make positively or negatively throughout your life, especially in your early childhood. And it also holds your instincts that you're born with as a human being, your fight or flight responses, your instincts on how you interact and how you survive, crying, all these things. So it's, some people even refer to it as infinite intelligence. Like the more that you spend time in the subconscious realm, the more a lot of people feel like they are connected to just all that is. Like they find it easier to pray. They might find it easier to self-actualize, to have intuition and get ideas for making more money, for healing. So it's an infinite resource that we have access to that is really hard to define as just one thing, but everyone can use it to their advantage for healing, self-improvement, and letting go of those things that are blocking them. So I know that it seems like it was all over the place, but you know, I really thought about your question long and hard about how to answer it. And the one key point that I want people to take away is that it's powerful and it is motivating up to 95% of your habits and your beliefs. So if you're not working with it, you're not going to make real progress anytime soon.
I think that makes a ton of sense. Because a lot of us are aware of our bad habits, our bad thinking, our, you know, what addictions and things of that sort. And even with like regular therapy, it takes so long to get to a breakthrough or make some changes. And then you do a hypnotherapy session. And you're like, wait a minute, like, I don't want to do this anymore. Or, you know, you get that breakthrough with that. So it makes sense. So tapping into the subconscious, if it's responsible for those things, as opposed to trying to deal with things on a conscious level. So thank you for that.
Absolutely.
That makes sense. So I kind of want to get into, you know, your own kind of history, you know, get into a little therapy session with you real quick and dive into your childhood, man, and how everything came to be in regards to, you know, where you're at now and your path. So can you share with us like kind of what your childhood experience was like growing up and some of the events that unfolded that led you to where you are now?
Absolutely. So I'm just a girl from St. Louis, Missouri. Okay. And it all started actually a little bit before that in Quincy, Illinois. So a woman, she was German, Irish, she was blonde hair, blue eyes. She was dating and got pregnant by a man of African descent who was also Cherokee. And this was in the late 80s. And the journey does start there because her family disowned her for getting pregnant by a black man, essentially.
So when she was pregnant with me, she was in a homeless shelter, and she decided to give me up for adoption. So I was given up for adoption for being a mixed baby, right? Mm-hmm. And I was adopted at 2 days old by a biracial woman who was married to a Black man. So kind of like similar story, but like they tried forever to have a child. They couldn't. After all this invasive procedures, they adopted me, and it was great. There's all these pictures of me and my dad together, like being best friends. He was like my first hero, just like many young girls. And when I was 5, my mom got pregnant, like miraculously got pregnant after like a decade of trying to have a baby, got pregnant in her late 30s. And it was like, great. Like she had me. She had a stepdaughter who was 12 years older than me. She had this baby on the way. She had this love of her life that she had been with for so long. And my dad got sick and died like 6 months after the baby boy was born.
Wow.
So what does that have to do with my story? Okay. Well, as you can imagine, a woman who loses the love of her life with the son to carry on his name, she had an adopted daughter and him, this baby. So I became kind of like this afterthought. And if she's listening to right now, she might be mad at that, but you know, I can't undo that. So it was, you know,
it's your experience. Yeah, absolutely.
And my stepsister at the same time when my mom was pregnant, my stepsister was 15 and she was pregnant. So then she gave birth around the same time that my baby brother was born. So there was two babies and two mothers and this adopted kid, and I was just kind of like lost in the shuffle. And after my dad died, I would cry. I would be like 5 years old, be like, oh, I miss my dad. I miss my dad. And my mom, you know, whether she was suppressing her grief or whatever was going on, she was also had a traumatic childhood, being a lot of abuse, alcoholic mother, all those things that we all hear a lot, that we've all experienced, not all of us, but you know what I mean? She didn't know how to handle that. So what did she do? She beat me for crying, saying that I missed my dead dad, who I was very close with.
Mm.
Okay. So what did that teach me? It taught me that if I was sad, I had to suppress my emotions because I was going to get in trouble. And then when I tried to like be playful and fun and like a happy kid, I would get in trouble because it was like, actually, we can't do that right now. We have these two babies. You just need to clean after them. Go do chores. Go do this. That was like a nuisance. And over time, I was just there to clean, shut up, not be be seen and not heard, not be happy, not be sad. So I learned in order to just to exist in that space, to not have emotion. And what did that do? Like later down the road, I learned that that instilled in me a fear of abandonment because I had given up for adoption. That's abandonment, losing your parent really early and then to death, and then losing another parent who was really happy to have you. But then as soon as she got another kid, kind of lost interest, and then not expressing your emotions. So if you're following me, you'll see how all of that can kind of lead to neurotic behavior, low self-esteem, poor social skills. Like I was really nervous about making friends because I always have, on some level, assumed that they were going to abandon me. So I never got close to people. And after a while, going into my teenage years, teen angst, and I couldn't really express myself, that turned into anger, that turned into substance abuse, that turned into just deep depression. And by the time I was like out on my own, a week after I graduated high school, I just knew I wanted to get away from St. Louis, where I grew up. And I didn't fit in because I was mixed. And in St. Louis at the time, you're either Black or you're white. So I wasn't white enough for the white kids. I wasn't Black enough for the Black kids. So everyone made fun of me and were like, you're Oreo and all those things that kids do. So I was very ostracized, even in like the school communities. I didn't have any friends. So it was like a lonely, angry existence. more or less ended up over time homeless because my social anxiety and my depression were so bad, and I didn't really have a family to rely on. They like would pick me up like when I was really down and like desperate, but outside of that, really no assistance. And then they would berate me for having to help me type situation. So I was like, man, I really don't like living. Like, this sucks. And but I knew that my family had a history of suicide, but and it really traumatized my family. So I cared enough not to put them through that. Like, I felt like they cared enough that if I did that, it would be just another trauma. So I was like, okay, well, if I'm not going to do that, I'm going to live. And if I'm going to live, I'm going to be happy. I'm going to learn how to be happy and successful, because this miserable shit is not working. Pushing people away, being homeless, all these things. And I realized, you know, I started reading self-help books, and I realized that it was possible to change. I started watching documentaries on how to be healthy. I ate healthier. I focused on yoga and exercise. I went to therapy and anger management, because I would punch people and like in the face. Like, I would just,
I can't see,
I know,
you doing,
right?
That.
I was really angry. I got into fights. I would cuss people out. People always told me, started telling me it felt like they were walking on eggshells around me, because I was so temperamental and so defensive all the time, and so combative that people didn't want to be around me. So, and that was a lot of the rage and suppressed emotion and anxiety and just causing conflict in my relationships, right? So I did all the things, partying, drugs, promiscuity, all those things to cope. I was a smoker. I partied all the time. I ate bacon cheeseburgers. I just, you know, I fluctuated like many people do between eating to cope and sex and vice and drugs, and these fluctuations, these moments of being healthy and clear and exercising and happy. But I would find myself back in a cyclical depression, unable to get out of bed, unable to answer the phone, unable to pull myself up to like go to work. And through all of my self-discovery and like trying to heal, I kept hearing that you have to work with your subconscious mind. Like, I knew I had to work with my subconscious, but I didn't really know how to do that. And so one day after all that, I was actually with my mom. She was sort of a hoarder at the time. She's gotten a lot better. We're like best friends now. But anyway, at the time we were doing one of our routine cleanouts, where we were cleaning out the basement, organizing the garage, getting all this extra clutter out of the way. And she picks up this self-help book and she's like, Ashley, do you want this? I'm just going to throw it away. And I was like, yeah, like, why not? So I looked at it, and it was called Change Your Life in 7 Days. It was a book with a CD. That's how long ago this was. A CD that was a self-hypnosis CD. And you were just supposed to like read the book, do some exercises, listen to it, and it was going to reprogram your subconscious mind and hypnotize you to be happier, more confident, et cetera. And I was like, you know, I've tried everything else. Like, what's the worst that can happen? You know, I've had all these other self-help books and I'm still miserable. So let's go, let's do this. And you know what? I tried it. I listened to it and my life did change. Not in 7 days. Because I'm a slow reader and I would procrastinate and I would be like, you know, I'm like, I'm not going to read a book in 7 days. It was chock full of information, like how to cope with stress, how to deal with caregivers that hit you, how to be more confident, how to set goals, how to have faith in your abilities. And I was like, dang, like, okay, so there's other ways other than just like drugs and meditation and all whatever. So once I really stuck to listening to the recording daily, my life turned around. I was keeping my jobs. I was setting goals. I was believing in my ability to accomplish them. I was reaching them, and I was happier. I was more confident. I noticed that I walked with my head held high instead of trying to like hide who I was all the time. I was I went from making $17,000 a year working as a hostess in restaurants, bouncing around at restaurants, to working for Edward Jones Investments with like at $44,000 a year. To me, that was a lot of money to go from that to that without even a college degree, because I just believed in myself that I could do it and I made it happen. I was motivated. I was networking. I got my dream car without a co-signer. And I was at Edward Jones one day. I was at my cubicle and I was looking around. I was like, you know what? Like, that shit turned my life around. And I did a full 180, and I want to learn how to do that to help other people do the same. And it really just started out as an idea of I'm going to have a book and my own CD and I'm going to help other people do it. And I want to help Black folks do it. That was the moment that I decided. I knew, I wrote down, I think I have it somewhere, that I really wanted to help the Black community, because all my life, like, I basically more or less grew up in a Black family, in Black culture, Black music, mm-hmm. Black everything, aesthetic, everything. And everyone that I knew that I grew up with was traumatized, had trauma, abuse, whatever, substance abuse, molestation, all of these things. And were just making excuses like, oh, life's just hard. Our ancestors had it harder. Therapy's for white folks. I don't do that. I don't put my business in the street. I'm just going to pray. I'm just going to smoke weed. These little cliche things to not really make progress and just kind of accept that that's just how life is and just deal with it. And I'm like, no, I'm living proof. We don't have to accept it. We don't have to do it. We can change. We can change our mind. We change our life. And so I was like, I want to help break that stigma and bring this modality to people of color. But you know what happened? Like, I don't even think a year after I made that choice, Get Out came out.
Oh, man. That's so funny, because I'm sure that was a lot of Black people's
initial
right. introduction to mm-hmm. what hypnotherapy is and what, you know, what it was like yeah. kind of thing. So.
I mean, I was looking at this movie like, this is brilliant, but dang. So yeah, after that, I went to school for hypnotherapy, and I learned much more than I ever thought I would. And I changed even more than I even thought I would, because listening to a CD or a recording is cool, but when you actually are working one-on-one with hypnotherapist, they can pinpoint, help you uncover different things. So your growth is exponential. You can grow much faster when you're working with an actual therapist one-on-one. So everything really changed in the most positive way. And that's my story. Sticking to it.
That is a powerful story, man. And I feel like I know a number of therapists and people in the mental health field. And it seems like a lot of people that have experienced trauma or really deep psychological pain, they really are geared towards providing, you know, support for others once they can, you know,
yeah.
heal themselves. So I do find that to be like some sort of like commonality and everything. So one of the things for you is like you deal with mm-hmm. Black men. Why specifically Black men? And then, like, what do you say to those that are like, yo, you're kind of like making excuses for Black men, or making them feel like, you know, it's okay to have certain habits that they have and things of that sort. You know, I'm looking at your post, Ashley, and you're like, Black women need to change this and do this and that and the third. And you're making excuses for these guys. They don't need that or whatever. Like, so what would you say to that? And why is it that you focus yeah. in on Black men?
It's a calling. It really is, because it's something that I've fought for years. Like, when I finally graduated from my hypnotherapy college in 2019, I still knew that I wanted to help the like people of color. I kind of didn't go for that right away, because like I said, Get Out came out, and I knew that wasn't going to help me build my practice. Like, it just wasn't going to be financially, economically stable. But I knew even at that time that I wanted to give a voice, be a resource for men. Because on my healing journey, through all of that, pre and post hypnotherapy, I had male friends that were going through it. I had boyfriends that I would say, hey, like, this is helping me with anxiety. This is helping with fears of abandonment, fears of success. Try this. No, I'm good. No, I'm a man. And they would be mad at me for suggesting it, right? Or if they were open to the suggestion, they would be like, that's for girls, or there's that's for white people. If there's no one there that looks like me, they didn't feel comfortable being their authentic self, showing up melanated in those spaces, because 9 times out of 10, we were like the only people of color in these healing spaces. So there was almost like, and also I was really into crystals. And when you're shopping for like healing crystals, they're all like, the marketing is like, put it in your purse and your self-love spray. And it's like, you can tell the marketing is for women. Or if you go to self-help book section at your local bookstore or Amazon, most of it is geared towards women. If you go to Target to buy a t-shirt, in the women's section, Boss Babe, Beautiful, Queen. And then what do you have in the male section? There's almost nothing as empowering in the male section, and it's just a couple maybe items. But it's like, if a guy wore a shirt that said King, you know, things are kind of changing now, but it would be kind of misconstrued as like conceited, you know. So I was noticing that there was a huge lack of resources for men to go to without stigma for emotional support, for moral support. And I really wanted to speak to that in my practice. Like when I first launched my social media back in 2020, I had Men Monday that was geared towards sharing resources and information on breaking the stigma of men's mental health issues, that men could be insecure, men could have eating disorders, men could have anxiety, and not be taught to just be tough all the time and like express your full array of human emotions, go to counseling, and help break that stigma on Men Monday. But even when I was sharing those resources, once again, I found very few of them in their marketing and their narrative and their message for men of color, for Black men. And it was really frustrating.
Right.
And so I was like, this is jacked up, you know. I did not make it my focus or my niche to market towards men, because for a long time, starting then, I was like, men would rather go to another man for therapy. Men would rather, you know, I'm not a man. They're going to say, you're not a man. You can't do that. You can't talk to us. You don't know what we go through, you know, all this stuff. And so I would just share resources on Men Monday to circumvent that. But literally since the moment I opened my practice, it's been this voice inside of me saying to do this and to help and to talk to Black men. And, you know, there would be times where I'd be meditating, or maybe I would be out with a night of friends and get drunk and get loose, and that voice would come up. Or I'd be listening to Kanye or seeing his mental breakdowns, and I'd be like, man, I wish I could help him, you know. Oh, and boy. It would just be like, you got to do it. And I'd be like, no. And I felt it, and I was like, but why? I would just stare in the mirror like, you got to do this. Like, I don't have a choice in the matter. And when I decided to really sit down and just answer the call, one of the things as a business owner you have to do is to do market research to see if it's like a viable niche. Like, is it going to be something like, who are your competitors, basically, right? There was no competitors. There was no competition. I was like, this is more depressing. I would be calling my friend like, do you know that they don't have nothing out here? This is really messed up and suicide is growing. And I just got so mad that like, they were like, that's because you have a niche that's, you know, you're going to be capitalized. I'm like, that's not the point. The point is that our people are suffering, or they want to change, and they, you know, there's nothing out there when they look for it. And I know what it was like when I was looking for things to help me on my healing journey. And I would be the token woman of color. I would be the token Black girl. Like, and it was uncomfortable. People would come up and say ignorant shit like, oh, you're here because life's hard because you're Black, huh? And I'm like, no, I'm here because, you know, I got anxiety.
What?
Like, like, don't do that. Don't make it about that. Like, so I knew what it was like. I know I'm not a man, but I know what it's like to bottle up your emotions, to be told that your emotions are not validated. Like I said in my when I was talking about my childhood, I know what it's like when boys cry and they're being taught, don't cry, be a man. And I, even though I was a female, I was basically taught that same message. Like my brother, it was like role reversal. If my brother cried and I'd be like, don't cry, be a man. My mom would yell at me and she's like, he can cry. He's a boy. But if I cried, I got in trouble. So it was like a reverse thing that actually helped me understand my clients in the long run. Cause, and I was like, oh, like, yeah, I know what that's like for men to receive that message as a human being, to suppress your emotions and to block your success and to lead to self-sabotage. And I saw a lot of men of color, you know, going through that and not having anywhere to turn. So I was like, well, I'm just going to start speaking to them and let them know that someone cares. I'm not a man, but I know how the mind works. Mm. And I know how you can overcome these things. And if you're interested, I'm here.
Yeah, that is so powerful, man. Kudos to you for doing that, and definitely thank you for that. I know you're helping out a lot of, you know, black men that probably would not get the help, you know, otherwise. And based on all that, I'm sure through your experiences, you're collecting a lot of information and data on some of the similarities that people come to you with, like as far as their issues and what they're going through. So I feel like a lot of folks don't really know black men like that, because we kind of hold a lot of stuff in and we don't have spaces where we can talk freely and openly without that whole like notion of, oh, you're not a man and, you know, all this kind of thing. So we hold a lot of things back. So what have you found to be some of the major problems that men are coming to you about?
Without a doubt, worthiness. Having a sense of worthiness is something that people would probably find surprising. That's like one of the main trends, being feeling worthy of success, feeling worthy of love, feeling worthy of celebrating their wins, feeling worthy of feeling good. I think that comes from this idea that, especially in the black community, like your self-worth is based on how much money you make, how tall you are, how athletic you are, how many bills you have, what kind of car you drive, what kind of sneakers, what name brand you wear, what you listen to, what you drink. Like there's all these external factors that we're saying that, okay, if you have these things, then you're worthy of a relationship. And if you don't measure up to those things, then, and if you weren't taught growing up to have an internal sense of self-worth, regardless of all that, then you can get lost in the shuffle and have a lower self-worth than you would want, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And, that makes perfect sense.
Another thing that aligns with that stuck out to me, that really was like Ashley, you have to pursue this niche working with black men, was Chris Rock. I know, for better or for worse, but I think he's funny, whatever. And he said in his stand up that men are not loved unconditionally like women and children, because women are taught, if you're big, if you're small, if you're tall, if you got good hair or bad hair, whatever, there's no such thing as bad hair, but you know what I'm saying? You can be broke, you can be curvy, you can be thin, you can be all these things. You can have an attitude and you're worthy of love. You're a queen, girl. You got this. He should be lucky to have you, whatever, right? Unconditional love. Mm-hmm. Love, just meet me, love me without condition, for better or for worse. But men are not taught that. Men are not given that. It's like, oh, girl, you should leave him if he loses his job. You should leave him if he gets sick. You should leave him if, you know, he's got anxiety or mental health issues. He's not a man. And so there's constantly teaching men that, like, we're loving you on a certain condition, and if you don't meet our conditions, then we're going to move on. And men either know that consciously or unconsciously, and so they become workaholics, or if they don't want to be workaholics and they can't meet up to the pressure, they become withdrawn, right? So it's really important to, I think men are starting to realize, especially after we work together, that they want to feel more worthy regardless of what the world is telling them, especially as black men, when you're always taught that, oh, you're black, so you must be dangerous, or you must not be as smart as white people or other cultures. You must, you talk well, like you're always being measured up, you know, like, oh, surprise, that you're actually competent, like these sorts of things. And it's like, we know how wrong that is, but you can't say that it doesn't affect you on some mental level. And so that can affect your sense of worthiness too. So yeah, definitely feeling worthy of good things is one of the number top ones.
Gotcha. All right. So Ashley, I'm listening to you right now. Might be a man, black man. Maybe I'm like, yo, this sounds great. Ashley would probably really help me out in my situation. I know I got issues. However, money's tight. I can't really afford it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't really have, I'm not making money like that to be able to pay for something like, you know, my mental health and stuff like that. What advice would you give to that person? Like, is there anything that they can do if they feel like they are not financially in a place where they can pay for, you know, services? I know, like, you know, as much of help that you want to do, like, you can't afford to give people free services or else you wouldn't have a career. So what advice would you give to those that say that they can't afford you or they can't afford the mental health care that they need?
So if you feel like you can't afford it, I would say number one, to start to ask yourself, how can I afford it? Because I only say that because when we say we can't do something, it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. So just changing the language can help to open up like new ideas, problem solving, to figure out how eventually you can afford it. But I have been in a place where I couldn't afford mental health. So what did I do? And I wanted to work with my subconscious mind. Learning how to meditate, journaling, and starting to uncover different subconscious motivations. You can look up journal prompts for your specific healing that you want to do. Just researching, doing research on how to heal on your subconscious mind. You can read, I do recommend the book, The Power of the Subconscious Mind by Joseph Murphy. That can give you some really powerful tips on self-healing. But also reaching out to the therapist, and rather than assuming they're super expensive, having an honest discussion about their prices, because they might offer a payment plan or they might offer some sort of scholarship where they're offering free services. Therapyforblackmen.org, they give up to $88,000 a year, I think, in free therapy services to men that qualify. So go to therapyforblackmen.org. I myself offer a payment plan just to be more accessible to clients. And it's a matter of looking for resources that are out there for affordable therapy and finding ways to work with your subconscious mind at home until you're able to have the funds to do it. But make it a priority, because we'll always say we can't afford it, but then we find ourselves dropping a G on something that we didn't even need for instant gratification. You know what I'm saying?
That's facts.
So
we do that. Yep.
Make it a priority whenever you can.
Great advice. All right. So let's say I am listening in and I'm like, yo, I got to have Ashley in right away. Walk me through that process of setting up, you know, a session with you. And then when I do get in the session, like what my expectations should be and how we'll go pretty much.
So you can start the journey to work with me by going to ashleyb.com, ashleyb.com. And on there, you can learn more about me and click a 4-week program, because my goal is to get you your goal of conquering your emotions, any rage or anxiety or habits that you have in 4 weeks or less. So click 4-week program, learn more about it, and click the calendar to book a free consultation, a free strategy call where I can learn more about you. You can share more about what your goals are so that we understand that I know that my goals, my skill set can help you achieve your goals. And if not, then at the end, I can make a recommendation on where else you might want to go to help you feel better quicker than later, right? So it's not like, oh, I can help you buy it. It's like, oh, I can't, but here's who can sort of situation. And if we do agree that it's a good fit, you have the funds, we can work together, then you can expect in a session to just vent a little bit more about what it is that you've been going through, and I'll educate you on how your mind works and how we could use how your mind works a little bit more to help you accomplish your goals sooner than later. And then also you might receive some coaching on some coping mechanisms that can help you release stress, manage emotions, these sorts of things. We'll customize it for you. And then you will experience therapeutic hypnosis, which is basically a calm state of being, deep relaxation to help you turn your attention inward to your own wisdom to get clarity on what you need to do to move forward. And then it's recorded. So, you know, I'm not saying anything crazy. And you can also listen to it like a guided meditation at home for reinforcement. So, you know, it's very relaxing to listen to it to help strengthen those new subconscious beliefs. And after that, you tell me how it is. You tell me how you change and be like, what your feedback is. It's really good. Most clients see results in 1 to 3 sessions, but the 4-week program does a deep dive so that you have lasting results guaranteed. And are your own coach and your own therapist after that. I give you tools in order to coach and maintain, overcome roadblocks as they come up in the future. Yeah.
I love that part because, like I said before, like, you're teaching people how to do these things as opposed to doing it for them and having them, like, right. You know, Ashley, I need you right now. Like, I'm having a, you know, a moment or whatever. And it's like, wait a minute, I'm having a moment. Ashley taught me how to deal with this stuff. Let me try this and try that. So I think that is really more powerful for us as Black folks to be able to do, as opposed to have somebody that's going to be, you know, almost like motherly, like, where we're going back to them constantly and not being able to do those things for ourselves. So I definitely appreciate that component of what you do.
So thank you for acknowledging that. And you know, I always say we're all time for it. Ain't nobody got time for that to keep going back to therapy. Like, just tell me what I need to do. I'll do it. Like, right. And you know, it's really just about being efficient and honoring your time.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Well said. All right. Going back into your own mental health, you are in a space that I would say is predominantly white. You're the first Black hypnotherapist that I've met. So how has your experience been in that space and maneuvering through it? Like, just, I guess, both professionally and just everything else with clients and all of that. Like, what has been your kind of experience maneuvering through a mostly white space?
Yeah.
Like, it's hypnotherapy.
It's been an uphill battle because rule number one of a business is that you have to be good at marketing. And when it comes to marketing, like, knowing your ideal market, right? But marketing 101 is, or sales 101 is, like, you're selling your service, and the sales 101 is people buy from people who are like them. Okay. And so if you go on Instagram or YouTube or Google search and you're searching for a hypnotherapist and you are interested in holistic healing modalities and you're white, right? Most white people are in, like, know what hypnotherapy is, and they don't care about Get Out, so they're looking for that. And they see this laundry list of white hypnotherapists, and they see me. Who are they more likely to buy from? A white hypnotherapist, someone that looks like them, right? And when it, and it's like, right. I couldn't market towards Black folks, or, you know, because of the movie, because of the stigma, because even in my own family, they saw how my life turned around, but they would be like, you can't hypnotize me. You can't do this. You can't, you know, I'm strong. I'm whatever. It was such a pushback for so long, and such reluctance to even hear what I was talking about that I didn't have any clients coming in. And the ones that I did, they were getting good reviews. They were, like, seeing great transformation. But for a while, like, they weren't even telling anybody. Like, a lot of hypnotherapists build their business based off referrals. They help people get these transformation. And then they're like, wow, I'm going to tell all my friends and all my family. I'm going to send them to you. Like, that's the majority of hypnotherapists. They build it on referrals who don't even do marketing. But I was not getting that experience because the few clients that I'd had, they were like, there's a stigma. People are going to think I'm weak. Like, I'm not going to tell people I'm going to hypnotherapist. You know, I had black clients. I had some white ones. And, you know, it was an uphill battle for sure. And it was kind of frustrating because I was like, I'm just as good as they are. Like, I should be having 10K much, just like they already have thousands of followers. I have like a few hundred, you know, on social media. So I had to learn how to switch my mind frame to believe, like, again, a subconscious level, that this practice was going to work out for me, that this mission that I was on, this faith that I had in what I was doing was going to work out for me regardless of the cards that were stacked against me. And I was going to find a way to do it. And that eventually people were going to be tired of suffering. They were going to hear what I was saying and they would give me a chance. And that's what's happening now. You really have to just believe that it's going to work out regardless of the racial thing. Because, yeah, it is difficult, but I had to start to say that, you know, it's not impossible and it's going to work. And here we are. Like, I'm getting more and more clients every day, and they're just like, I don't care what it is. They're like, you do hypnosis? Okay. Like, I'm tired of suffering, so help me out. And I think COVID kind of did that for our community, where they were tired of a lot of things were coming up to the surface and they couldn't leave, they couldn't go to the club or all these things that they would normally blow off steam. So all this like issues came up, and now they're exploring different modalities that can really help them. Not everyone's there yet, but it's people are much more willing to listen than they were before. I'll say that.
For you too, like a strong part of therapy as a therapist is getting therapy yourself. So right now, like, what do you do for your own therapy? Like, do you see a hypnotherapist as well, or
yeah,
you do things
question.
On your own? So, what does that look like?
I do have a hypnotherapist. I don't go to them as often, but it is really nice to just be able to call and get that objective point of view. And I'm vigilant about practicing what I preach. Like, I cannot make social media content and talk to my clients about eating healthier, building confidence, being motivated, believing in yourself, lowering anxiety, sleeping better, all these things, if I'm not doing it myself. I refuse to be a hypocrite, you know? And so I have routines that help me maintain my mental health. I journal every morning. I take CBD to help me on a cellular level.
Can you explain what that is? Because I feel like some people think the minute you mention CBD,
yeah,
they're like, weed? Like, you know, that's like that pops into
okay.
People's
CBD
head.
CBD is from the hemp plant, not the marijuana flower. And it basically it's not psychoactive. It's a plant-based supplement that works with your body chemistry to help support balanced mood, lower anxiety, lower stress, improve sleep. And it can do this. CBD and THC, they're cannabinoids, right, from the hemp plant. It's just like an ingredient from plant medicine from the hemp plant that interact with our bodies in different ways. But what a lot of people don't know is that our bodies naturally produce cannabinoids that are like the ones found in hemp and marijuana. And what the cannabinoids do is they help our nervous system and our brain systems, our immune system, all these different important systems communicate with each other to maintain balance in mind and body, and strengthen our immune system and sleep. And like they regulate all the important things, appetite, mood, and these sorts of things. But what can happen is our bodies can become cannabinoid deficient, meaning we don't produce enough to maintain balance in our sleep and regulate those important things that help us sleep, feel good, feel happier, these sorts of things. Scientists are still trying to figure out why we become cannabinoid deficient, probably through diet, exercise, life experience, Wi-Fi, all these things that are just draining our body all the time of different things. But when you take CBD specifically, it helps to balance out your cannabinoid production. So if you were making too much or too little, it like modulates that. So it's creating the right amount for your body to have defense against disease and strengthen your immunity, produce dopamine and serotonin. So you're regulating those happy hormones like more easily, repairing brain damage, improving memory, improving focus. These important brain systems are now more in balance. So you're feeling better, longer, more naturally without side effects, without feeling drowsy. And you're just giving your body what it needs, what it naturally makes anyway, but like replenishing it, kind of like taking a vitamin when you're vitamin deficient, right? And but THC doesn't do that. Weed does not do that. So it helps your body in certain ways, but not as well as CBD, because they're two different cannabinoids and they interact with your body differently. So CBD, one of my missions is to help educate people on that. And I take it daily. I go to my hypnotherapist periodically, but mostly I practice self-hypnosis, because self-hypnosis is just like something where you can do on the fly for inner child healing, shadow work, confidence boost, imagination, stress release, money blocks, manifestation, all these little buzzwords that people hear that they're trying to effortlessly just fight their way up into and try to figure out. Self-hypnosis basically does all that. It's so weird.
All right, before we close out, I want to get into a little quick activity here called What's Your Favorite? Identifying a few of your favorite things, getting to know you a little better. So I know, like, for you, like, you broke a lot of bad habits through, you know, hypnosis. So what was your favorite bad habit that you were able to get rid of?
Honestly, this might sound like I'm saying this just for the interview, but honestly, hating men. I started to realize that from a very young age, I was being pulled aside by, like, my mom's friends and people just throughout my life who would take me aside and be like, men ain't shit. They're stupid. They're pedophiles. You need to be afraid of them. Your mom is like, after my dad died, my mom was dating, and my mom's friends would come and be like, your mom doesn't know these men. They're probably pedophiles. They'll probably touch you. You need to be afraid of them. Just stay away from them. So they ingrained in me that men were scary, that men were bad, stay away. And then I would see, like women in my life, you know, caregivers and things, date married men. And they were very open about it. Like, everyone knew they were married. So I was like, okay, men are cheaters or they're pedophiles. Or I would see, you know, my cousin stuff in domestic abuse situations. And then you go, or they, so there was very little like positive role model. And the men that were good, who were faithful, who weren't abusers, the women and my family would talk them down. Like, you're not shit, you're weak, you're too nice, you're these things. So it was like, and you know, I didn't know any better. So I just thought they were white, you know? And then it's just because that was my belief system, that's what my filter for the world was. And that's the type of man that I attracted into my life. Men who were untrustworthy, who were deep down low, who were mean, who were insecure, these sorts of things, because that belief was now reflected in my reality and my experiences, if that makes sense. Your subconscious is going to focus on what matches your belief.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think that is the imagery that most women get of men, specifically Black men.
On my healing journey, starting to attract nicer men, and I wasn't giving them a chance because that belief that they aren't shit was putting a filter on their good intentions. And so I started to realize that I had this belief, I really needed to let it go. And I do dream therapy with my clients too. So I did dream therapy on myself too. You can like use your dreams to help you overcome limiting beliefs too. And I had a very vivid dream. I don't know if we have time to talk about it, but it was like, it was really beautiful. And they were talking to me in my dream, these men. And it was like, you're safe, you're secure, you're this, you're that. Like, and that I walked away from it, from them in the dream, feeling, okay, that's behind me. That hate, that resent, that fear is gone. And trusting that, having internal trust that, I know when a person, a human being, man or woman, does not have my best interest in mind, when they have bad intentions or whatever, and when they do and when they don't, and I can gravitate towards when they have my best intentions and have that be a co-empowering relationship. And that's all I have now, that platonic or otherwise. And so your beliefs really do dictate your relationships. And that was a saving grace for me.
That is so powerful, man. Thank you for sharing that. That's powerful. What's been your favorite affirmation or mantra?
I am who I am, and who I am is enough always. An event, a music festival, not even a music festival, an event. And the moment they said it, I was like, oh yeah, I don't feel like enough. And it just was like I started saying that a lot and it changed. So that's a good one. I recommend it.
Gonna use it. Yeah. You're giving me some tools for the toolbox right now.
There you go.
Appreciate that. Favorite song to listen to for peace of mind?
So I listen to what's called solfeggio frequencies. I know that probably sounds really heavy, but there's
solfeggio frequencies.
Yes, solfeggio frequencies. SOLFEGGIO, I think. And basically they're mixed with ambient music, but emotions have frequencies, and they found that if you listen to these certain frequencies, they can help you switch to a more positive frame of mind, and they lower stress hormones like cortisol. So you have a physical reaction. Your body is de-stressing as you're listening to them, and they're just like really calming. And so if I am tense or feeling like a negative mindset, I'll just put them on in the house, like while I'm cleaning or something. And it's just like more peaceful. So I highly recommend those. Yeah.
Okay. You can find that on YouTube?
Yeah, absolutely. Spotify. They're getting more popular. So.
All right. Another tool, man. You're giving me all these tools.
I'm all
right.
About it.
favorite book on the mind or books on the mind?
So I definitely recommend everyone read The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg. The Power of Habit and Why We Do What We Do. And it just helps you understand better on why it's hard to break bad habits, give you tips on how to do that, whether it's through like alcohol addiction, gambling, responding to negative customers, Karens at work. You know, it just kind of helps you break down and understand and gives you some tips on how to do that, change your habits.
Got you. I saw you had a post on like Black heroes and things like that. So who's your favorite Black hero?
James Brown.
James Brown.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I love James Brown. I don't know. I just, I get so happy when I hear his music, and I know that he was like a womanizer and he wasn't like the greatest human being in that way in his personal life, but he really was an advocate for Black empowerment and pulling yourself up by the bootstraps and not using your circumstances as an excuse to stay where you are. Like he grew up, his parents gave him up for adoption, but they basically abandoned him. And he grew up in a whorehouse watching women go to church and then coming and turning tricks in like the whorehouse, and it was unsupervised. And so he saw an opportunity to make his own money dancing as a young kid, turn that into a career. He didn't look like an entertainer. He was shorter. And at the time, all the Black entertainers were like light skin with good hair. And he had African features. He was like, he didn't fit the mold. And he found a way to innovate music and create funk music, which influenced break dancers and created hip hop, and like was James Brown was sampled in like almost all like so many early hip hop songs, and that like changed culture. And he, at a time where people hated being Black, he wrote the song "I'm Black and I'm Proud," like to help really use his name, use his notoriety to controversially help shift identity for Black people in America. And nobody else was really doing that. They were all just trying to tiptoe around the issue. He's like, no, I'm proud of who I am, and you'd be proud too. Like that took guts, and I love him for that.
Absolutely, man. Thank you for sharing that. I didn't know about the whorehouse part.
Yeah,
with James Brown. That's interesting. All right. your favorite vegan meal or food? I know you are a plant-based eater, so what do you enjoy?
I know I say this all the time. Anything with potatoes. Like, that seems so basic, but I love roasting potatoes, or even like making french fries, or soups with potatoes in them. I love mashed potatoes. I know that sounds so crazy, but it's like in Forrest Gump, he's like, you know, jumbo shrimp, Creole shrimp, dude. Like, he's just all the different types of shrimp. That's how I am with potatoes all day, every day. Yeah.
That's cool. Okay. What is your favorite thing to do outside of your career?
I'm like, what? I'm like, do I really have a life outside? Yeah, I like to spend time with my dog, Peter. He's so dang cute, and he's fun and smart and a tyrant. He just like terrorizes the neighborhood, and I just like spending time with him so he's not bored and he feels loved and gets belly rubs. Yeah.
Cool. What kind of dog?
He's a Yorkie. A little small. A little tiny. Yeah.
That's cool. All right. What's your favorite life gem? I feel like we all have that phrase or something somebody told us in life that we're like, yo, that was powerful. Like, what's your favorite life gem that anybody has given you?
Most definitely. So that would be Erykah Badu's and the song On and On. She said, a wise man knows that he knows nothing at all. And from a really young age, like, that stuck with me. Because I don't know. At first, like, it's just something that I heard on repeat all the time. But as I got older, I realized there were so many people, including myself, who thought they knew everything, and they would be like really argumentative about things that they like believed in, and then later found out that they were wrong. Or I'd be arguing with someone that like I knew they were wrong, and I was like, dang, they really are mad about this. Like, they're really fighting this, and they like don't even know, you know. And I saw that in myself, and it was just like, once you feel like you know everything, you become, your life kind of like shrinks. And then you close people out, you alienate people, you limit your opportunities and your life experiences, and you just assume that you know things when really there's, I don't know, I think that just really helped me. Like, a wise person knows they know nothing at all, I think.
Agreed. Yeah, man, that's
it's hard,
super important.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to conceptualize, but once you understand it, it's like it really helps you out in life. All right. Speaking of life, what is it that you want to know? Like, when we're looking 40, 50 years down the line, what is it that you want your legacy to be and for people to remember about who you were and what you represented?
Yeah, this is a really meaningful question to me, because it's actually something I've been thinking a lot lately. Like, I've been having visions of me as like an old lady, like kind of walking on a stage, and I'm like, what would people be applauding me for? So, one, I do feel like God is using me as a vessel to help other Black men get out of their shell to live their purpose. I do feel that way, because there's so many of my clients who are saying that I have this mental block, and I have this, seeing your page and your content, your YouTube, I have something similar that I want to speak to Black men, but I'm not doing it. And I want to get out of my way. I want to break these habits that are keeping me from living my purpose. And I'm just like, yeah, like, it's so weird that once I decided to actually commit to this, I'm getting people who were struggling with the same thing I was. I was struggling with answering that call. And now that I'm doing it, there's Black men who say that they want to do it. And like what you and I talked about earlier, there are so few resources that are marketed towards Black men for us, by us type situation, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And men are looking for that. But then when they don't find it, they give up and they're just like, oh, I'm just going to figure out on my own, or piecemeal things together. I even have like an uncle in his 70s that told me that, like, he wants to try psilocybin magic mushrooms for trauma healing, but all the places that he go to are white, and he feels alone there in those spaces. So
what are your thoughts on that, by the way? Because I know that's a new thing right there, right. Like the like mushroom kingdom. And
there's a lot mushrooms are more like us. Like we have a lot of, it's weird how physiologically we have a lot in common with mushrooms. And they do help activate certain regions of the mind that are dormant. Like we only use like up to 5% of our mind power. So when you are using them, it helps to activate those as well as break what we call neural pathways, habits, like the actual neurons that are creating your bad habits and memories and emotional connection to trauma. So I do think that they are very useful in the healing experience. But what a lot of the people I've talked to that are in this space to help facilitate mushroom healing journeys say that people don't know what to do after they heal. So it's like, oh, they have this mushroom experience and now they feel better, but they're like, now what? Like all the they've built their whole life and identity and habits on that trauma, that emotional weight. So now it's not there. They don't know what to do. And so it's kind of like starting over sometimes for some people. Everyone's different. And I don't think it should just be the only thing. A lot of people do mushrooms and they have a breakthrough and then they're like, okay, now I'm done. No, I think it should not be the only thing. You should do other things to maintain that growth.
I'm going to put you on the spot. Are you speaking from experience or from theory?
No, from observation. I haven't done a mushroom journey per se. I've done other psychedelics for healing. And they're powerful. I love them. But I know that it wasn't the only thing that I needed in order to move forward, to actually say, okay, that's done. This is what I'm going to replace those old bad habits with. You have to know what to replace, have something coaching on what to replace it with to move forward.
That is interesting, because I've spoken to a therapist on this, and they said it's, to them, it's almost like cheating. Like it's almost like skipping steps. And then, like you just said, like not knowing what to do afterwards.
Yeah.
It's like they skip to like the final level, and after they beat the game, like it's nothing, like what am I supposed to do now, like kind of thing.
Yeah, so what am I supposed to do now? And I think because we live in such an instant gratification culture that people are looking, oh, I just want to take a drug or do this or take an ayahuasca or something and be done on my healing journey. And they think that that's it. And it's so frustrating because I've had people that wanted to work with me, and they're like, oh, I'm just going to do mushrooms instead. I'm just going to do ayahuasca instead. Yeah. And I'm like, you're not getting it. If you think that you can just pop a pill and get rid of your childhood trauma, that's, you know, it is like cheating. It is like wanting instant gratification. Hypnotherapy makes it really easy to move forward, but people just think that they can just take a pill or a drug and as a substitute. And I was so, so grateful to one client who literally, when they came up out of hypnosis, they said, wow, that was more powerful than mushrooms. And I was like, can I get that in writing? Can you make a video? Like, I'm sorry, I don't want to put you on blast, but I've had people reject my services because they said they're going to do mushrooms. And hearing someone say that would be so powerful. And they were like, yeah. So they actually made a video testimonial saying it. And I was so grateful because I was like,
That is dope.
Yeah.
That's dope.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool, man. But yeah, I'm so happy with the work that you are doing, and I hope it continues to grow and you become even more successful, especially in a small space, you know, that like we discussed earlier. So I'm looking forward to your progress, and I do have a feeling you will be back on the program.
Yeah.
Cause I feel like we got more to talk about. But before we leave out, do you mind leaving us with your favorite quote and what it means to you?
My favorite quote. Oh man, that is on the spot right there. I know you asked me earlier, but so my favorite quote. Change your mind, change your life. Can't say that enough. Your mind is the foundation of your reality. And if you can improve that anyway, a little bit every day, your life is going to get better. I guarantee it.
That is powerful. Man, thank you so much, Ashley, for coming through on the program and giving us some powerful gems and tools for our mental health toolbox. For those of us that are like, yo, I need to hit up Ashley ASAP, or they want to check out your work, what you've been doing, your social media, where can they find you?
Yeah, at ashleyb.com, ashleyb.com. And if you are looking on Instagram, it's ashleyb_wellness.
All right, there it is. Thank you so much, Ashley, for the time that you spent with us today. And again, we look forward to having you back on. Listeners, share the program. Get Ashley in if you need her for a consultation. You do free consultations. So that is that for everybody, or am I putting you on the spot?
No, everybody, yeah. Let's okay. Do it. Let's talk.
All right, cool. Free consultations. And it is definitely worth it. I could speak from experience. And I know that we all need something. And I think hypnotherapy is a good introduction to mental well-being and mental health for those of us that know that we need it, but don't know what spaces to go into. So definitely a great space to go into. So share the program, hit Ashley up. And of course, remember, your mind is the most powerful tool in the universe. Therefore, if you can think it, you can do it. If you believe in it, you can be it. And if you fight for it, you can have it. The world is yours. This has been your host, Mr. G, and I'll see you next time on Mastermind.
So every day I'm going hard. I'm talking business, bank accounts, and credit cards. And somehow we defeat the odds and making sure that no one starve illegal or you had a job. And when they doubted me, brought the best out of me. And women wanna holler, and fellas wanna shout at me. Voices in my head, I swear they getting kinda loud at me. And how I turn this thing into gold, see this is alchemy. They never know.